You're listening to Seminars at Hadley. This seminar is Blindness on the Job, presented by Kelsey Thompson, moderated by Billy Brookshire.
I'd like to welcome you all to Seminars at Hadley. My name is Billy Brookshire. I'll be your moderator today. Today we're going to be talking about blindness on the job. Kelsey Thompson, our presenter from the rehab counselor from the Lighthouse of Chicago, is going to answer a lot of your questions about being blind and on the job. So by all means, ask any questions you want to. She's also got a great presentation to deal with a lot of the issues that some of you guys deal with on a day-to-day basis. So tune in and listen up, folks, and so that we can get the most out of this presentation, I'm going to shut up for a while and turn the microphone over to Kelsey. Kelsey, take it away.
Good morning, everybody. What I wanted to do initially was give you a little bit of background, some perspective from where I'm coming from with this presentation. I'm kind of drawing from two different spheres of my life. On the one side, I am a certified rehab counselor. I've worked for the past 5 years as a vocational counselor at the Chicago Lighthouse for people who are blind or visually impaired, where I've been working with youth and adults who are in various stages of finding and maintaining employment. On the other side of it, I'm also a visually impaired person myself. I've been legally blind since birth from a condition called albinism. So for part of this presentation, I'm also drawing a little bit from my own experiences as well as a visually impaired person on the job. So a quick overview of what I'm going to cover today. I'm going to start by making a few comments about career exploration. Before we get into all the nitty-gritty legal and technical stuff, I wanted to first talk about some resources to help job seekers who are blind to actually find the right career for them, to find the right fit. Then I'm going to talk briefly about legal rights and self-advocacy, talk a little bit about the Americans with Disabilities Act, and share some tips for effective self-advocacy and conflict resolution on the job. Then I'm going to spend hopefully the bulk of our time talking about disability disclosure in the workplace, how to navigate that question of to tell or not to tell, and I'll go over some questions to consider when deciding if and when and how to disclose a vision impairment on the job. And then lastly, just a couple points about the employer side of things, employer concerns and frequently asked questions. I'm going to address some of the myths and misconceptions about blindness and talk about what employers need to know about hiring people who are blind or visually impaired. So let's start by talking about career exploration. A lot of what I'm talking about here might relate more to younger job seekers, to teens and young adults, recent graduates who are kind of new to the job market. But it also has some relevance to people who've had a vision loss in midlife. And essentially what I'm going to talk about is how to sort of balance your hopes and your dreams for your dream job versus the demands of the real world, the real job market out there. This is sort of the first step towards setting realistic goals for yourself as a job seeker. So some questions to consider when negotiating this decision would include, like, what's particularly appealing about your dream job? What made you choose this line of work? What is it about this job that you like? What potential barriers or setbacks might you encounter in working toward this job? And this is where you have to kind of get out your crystal ball and try to look into the future and be as objective as you can in foreseeing and predicting some potential setbacks. What challenges might you face in working toward this goal? You also might look at what skills or transferable skills you currently possess that might fit well with this job. And transferable skills is kind of a buzzword for those of us in the voc rehab industry. It's basically determined by analyzing your past accomplishments or experiences on the job, either direct or indirect. So some of the examples that one of my favorite examples would be someone who worked as a cab driver and maybe had a vision loss in midlife. Now, they may not be able to go back to their previous job as a cab driver, but they have a lot of transferable skills from that profession that might carry over into another job, such as navigating and knowing routes in a city, dealing with customers, dealing with money, and that kind of thing. Another question to consider is what other jobs might be related to your dream job. There are a lot of careers that are kind of linked together in certain ways. So maybe there's this one dream job that you have, but there are some other jobs that kind of relate to it that are similar, that draw on similar skills and values. what jobs or volunteer activities might help you to work your way up to this dream job. And this is, again, particularly relevant for youth or for people that are new to the job market. We can't always start at the top. You need to work your way up. So start thinking about how you can get your foot in the door and work toward that bigger goal. And this one's pretty important. What education or training will you need in order to reach this ultimate goal? And keep in mind changes in the current job market as well. There are a lot of stricter education requirements for many jobs. There are a lot of job seekers out there now and fewer jobs. So you need to be realistic and to do some homework to find out actually what employers expect from people going into a particular field. And then lastly, what is the outlook like for this type of job? And again, be real. For example, if I was working with a client who wanted to work as a DJ, as a disc jockey, we might do some research and find out, well, geez, you know, the outlook for this job isn't great. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to just completely discard this dream of yours, but you have to keep that in mind when planning for your goals. A personal skills assessment is sort of a nice way to get an in-depth evaluation of your current skill set, and sometimes it helps to ask others for feedback in some of these areas too, so you can be a little bit more objective. Sometimes it's hard to take a good, honest look at ourselves in some of these areas. Questions you might ask include what skills and credentials are required for my dream job, which of these skills and credentials do I already possess, and which of them do I need to improve on? And which of these can I reasonably expect myself to attain? And which are a little out of the question? So just a few questions to think about when doing a personal skills assessment. I've listed here a few career exploration tools that I think are particularly useful for people who are visually impaired or blind. The first four up here are kind of related. So job shadowing and mentoring, finding somebody who works in a field that interests you and spending some time with them, getting to know them, and even if possible, spending some time on the job with them to see what their daily work entails. Informational interviews are sometimes a nice way to make an initial contact with an employer and also to network, to make some connections, to learn about their industry, their hiring practices, et cetera. Volunteering is a fantastic way to not only get some work experience, but to network and to learn about different careers, as well as internships that you might be able to get through a school or college or university to prepare for a particular career. And a lot of you on the webinar today might be familiar with the work of Karen Wolf, who's done a lot of research in vision and blindness. And she's pointed out the importance of experiential learning in the vocational development of people who are visually impaired or blind. So being able to actually experience some of these jobs firsthand, be on the job site, and to get to know what the job entails can really be so valuable to someone who's visually impaired or blind, because we don't always get the information that a sighted person can just pick up. Some other tools, resources to help you learn about different careers would be high school or college classes that you might have enjoyed to find some jobs that sort of play into that. Interest inventories, two of my favorites are the Holland self-directed search and the Myers-Briggs type indicator. There are tons and tons of resources online where you can take take interest inventories in either of these either of these tests and get some feedback about what kind of a vocation might match up to your interests and your personality. I find them to be pretty helpful. They don't necessarily give you all the answers, but they might give you some direction, give you some ideas that you never thought about before. Vocational evaluations are often offered for people with disabilities. They can be a nice way to get a comprehensive assessment that looks at your academic skills, aptitudes, physical abilities, interests, and goals, and give you some feedback about what kind of job might be a good fit for you there. I know that for the other rehab counselors on the webinar today, we get asked this question a lot, and every time I get asked it, I'm not able to give a clear answer. I have clients who will sit across from me and ask, what kind of job can a blind person do? And there is no answer to that question. I usually throw it back at them and say, well, what kind of job can you do? Because your vision is such a small piece of what enables you to do a job and to do it well. There are so many other things that we need to look at besides just your visual abilities. We need to look at your interests and your values and your skills and your education and find something that matches that, not a job that matches your vision. So the vocational evaluation is sometimes a nice way to get some feedback about your strengths and your skills as they relate to work and help you to set some goals for yourself. And there's also a number of online tools that have some great great information for job seekers who are blind, and I have a few resources at the end of this PowerPoint, and I'd be happy to share others if folks wanted to email me. One of my favorites is the American Foundation for the Blind's Career Connect site, which has tons and tons of resources on it. Here in Illinois, we also have a fantastic resource in the Illinois WorkNet website that has a lot of resources for job seekers, including labor market tools and job descriptions and links to employer sites and things like that. So definitely check those out. They can be great sources of information. My next section here is I had hoped to give a little bit of background about legal rights and self-advocacy, specifically the Americans with Disabilities Act. And just one second, and I'm going to pull my presentation back up here while I'm speaking so we don't lose any more time. So first of all, to caution everybody, I'm not a lawyer. I don't really have a background in law. I know about the Americans with Disabilities Act simply as a tool to empower my clients and to make sure that they have the information that they need to make informed choices about their job search. So a little bit of background about the law itself. The Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law in 1990 by the first George Bush, and it's a civil rights law for people with disabilities that addresses several areas, one of which is employment. So that's kind of what I'm going to be focusing on today.
And, Kelsey,
and there was also an Amendment Act that was signed into law about 3 years ago that sort of clarifies the term disability and makes it easier for folks with disabilities to seek protection under the law.
Kelsey, the PowerPoint just disappeared off the screen up here.
I've lost it here as well, and I can't seem to get it back up here. So if it's okay, I'm just going to...
You got it. Just roll. That sounds good to me.
I'll do what I can. So the first title of the ADA is the one that addresses employment, and it requires employers with 15 or more employees to provide qualified people with disabilities an equal opportunity to benefit from the full range of employment opportunities that are available to others. So you'll notice that the ADA doesn't necessarily require employers to give special treatment to people with disabilities. It just requires that they provide equal treatment or a freedom from discrimination for folks with disabilities. And a lot of times when we think of the ADA, we think specifically of the hiring process, but it also does deal with other aspects of employment, including recruitment and training, promotions, pay, benefits, leave, etc. So to start with here, I want to just clarify who is actually protected under Title I of the Americans with Disabilities Act. What do we actually mean when we say a qualified person with a disability? So the ADA defines disability as a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activities including things like reading, communicating, bending, and other physical activities. So in most cases, a significant vision impairment is considered a disability, but the law doesn't provide an exhaustive list of this condition is a disability and this one isn't. And it also protects for people that have a record of such an impairment, those that are regarded as having an impairment, as well as those who have an association with someone with a disability, such as a family member or a spouse. Another key term that we hear a lot when you're talking about the ADA is this term qualified person with a disability, and that's really important. That's the reason why I can't go around the corner here in the Illinois Medical District and apply for a job as a brain surgeon at Rush Medical Center and then claim discrimination when they deny me the job because I'm a person with a disability. They denied me the job because I was not a qualified person for that job. So to be a qualified person with a disability, a person has to meet the legitimate skill, experience, education or other requirements of a position that they're seeking or that they hold. And they have to be able to perform the essential functions of that job with or without an accommodation. And essential functions, the ADA makes a nice distinction between what they call essential functions and what are marginal functions of a job. So an example from my own job, an essential function of what I do would be interviewing and counseling clients by phone and in person. That's a big part of what my job entails. A marginal function of my job might be refilling paper in the copy machine when it runs out of paper. Now, there's no reason an employer could deny me a job as a rehab counselor because they might think I'm unable to refill paper in the copy machine. That's not an essential function of the job. So non-work-related functions are really inconsequential, such as how I get to work, where I live, how I get to the bathroom, for people who are visually impaired, sometimes we notice that employers sort of get fixated on some of these marginal issues, which are really not essential for doing the job. And this term I mentioned earlier, reasonable accommodation, is an important piece of it. It's a modification or adjustment to a job or the work environment that enables a qualified person with a disability to perform their job functions. So the examples can really vary widely. A lot of times in the blind and visually impaired arena, we think about installing adaptive technology on a computer or using a video magnifier as being examples of a reasonable accommodation. It also could include something as simple as moving a desk to reduce glare on a computer monitor, placing braille labels on important office landmarks, making meeting agendas and employee handbooks available in alternative formats, modifying policies to allow a dog in the workplace for a service animal, and making websites accessible to people who use assistive technology. One of the important things to remember when we talk about the Americans with Disabilities Act, and this is going to tie into what I talk about later, is that employers are only obligated to grant accommodations to people with known disabilities. So that's why this whole issue of disclosure becomes so important. If a person needs a reasonable accommodation on the job, no matter how simple it might be, it's important that that person be able to disclose their disability and to do it effectively. And usually when working with clients, I recommend that they do this, that they do it in writing and that they approach it as a collaborative process. And you're going to hear me say that a lot for the rest of the webinar. It's always important to keep documentation. I also had some information in the PowerPoint, which I'll make sure that we make available to everyone afterwards since we lost it on the screen here, about when an employer can ask an individual to self-identify as having a disability. It's kind of a common misconception that the ADA prevents employers from ever talking about a disability in the workplace, which isn't true. If a person has an obvious disability, if they disclose a disability or request an accommodation, or if an employer has reason to believe that a change in performance may be due to a medical explanation, they are entitled to ask about a disability, provided that it's work related and that it's done in a way that doesn't invade a person's privacy. I also included in the PowerPoint, I tried to pull up a couple resources for disability rights information outside of the U.S. because I understand we do have a lot of attendees today who are coming from countries outside of the U.S. and Americans with Disabilities Act obviously is just here in the U.S. So a good resource that I was able to find is the United Nations Enable Project, which deals with disability rights around the globe. And I would also be happy to help you to find some resources in your own country as well. If I didn't list them here, if you want to send me an email, I might not have all the answers, but I'd be happy to do a little research for you and try to dig up some information on that as well. So a bit about self-advocacy, which is so important. I'm a big proponent of it. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, the ADA only protects individuals with known disabilities. So it's important that we as people who are visually impaired, that our clients are able to advocate for themselves effectively in the workplace. And the first step in that process, as I see it, is being prepared to practice disclosing your vision impairments in your own words, to have medical documentation handy if it's necessary, to rehearse what you're going to say ahead of time, and maybe even to role play with someone, with a trusted friend or a family member, just sort of practice how you're going to talk about your vision in an effective and professional way. It's also great to do your homework, read up on a company. If you're interviewing for a new job, find out everything you can about that company. We live in a wonderful age where all of this information is available on the internet. I tell my clients, you have no excuse not to know the history of a company and to know about the job you're applying for before you go in for an interview. All that information is out there and readily available online. And it's also good to inquire about the interview process if you're applying for a new job, to find out if the employer incorporates any kind of pre-testing or inventories or medical exams before the job offer is made. It's good to know about that stuff ahead of time so that you're prepared for the process and that you know about the essential functions of the job. And this would allow you to sort of think about what accommodations you might need, if any. And also look into resources for you and the employer in implementing these, so you're not just presenting the employer with a problem or a challenge. You're presenting them with a challenge as well as a solution. Whenever discussing your vision impairments on the job, it's important to focus on your education, your training, and experience. You wouldn't be there if you weren't qualified for the job, so make sure that you convey that in what you're doing. And to always keep it job-related, don't disclose more information about your vision impairment than an employer needs to know, and state your accommodation needs and benefits in a straightforward way. I think some of us who are visually impaired, we get so used to answering questions from people, sometimes we have a tendency to share more than is necessary, and on the job, that's really you really don't need to go into too much detail about it. Keep it job related and keep it short and sweet. And of course, don't be apologetic or too aggressive. You need to find a nice middle ground where you're assertive, where you're able to get what you need, but you're not coming across too meek or too aggressive or litigious. And it's so important to know your rights. I know I'm going through all of this information so quickly today, but there's a lot of information out there so that you can arm yourself with information and know what your rights are as a person with a disability in the workplace. This one is really important, especially for some of the younger job seekers that I work with, is avoid appearing overly dependent on others. You need to really be in the driver's seat here. You don't want to have your mother or your boyfriend or girlfriend making the calls for you or advocating for you with an employer. You really need to take the lead and do that. As I said, investigate resources ahead of time so that you can help the employer out. It's us versus the problem, not you versus the employer. Don't present your vision impairment as something negative, costly, or complicated. Those of us who are visually impaired, we know that it's not always a walk in the park to have poor eyesight. We know that, and no one is saying that we need to sugarcoat it and say, like, oh, it's so wonderful to be visually impaired. But you understand your condition best, and you need to show the employer that even though this might be uncharted territory for them, it's really not a big deal to you, and you have control over the situation. A job interview may or may not be the appropriate time to discuss the accommodations you need, but it's helpful to just recall how you've overcome barriers in the past and how those have led to you being more productive. Again, it's a problem with a solution, not just a problem. And as I mentioned earlier, I think don't neglect the importance of a paper trail. Remember who you talked to, when, what you were told. Collect business cards, get organized, and whenever possible, get things in writing. I put some information in the presentation as well about conflict resolution when self-advocacy isn't enough. And the drafters of the ADA had intended the accommodations process to be collaborative and creative, but sometimes it challenges can arise and roadblocks can come up. So in instances like this, we need to sometimes need to be flexible, but without conceding something that you need. A compromise might be necessary, but you want to decide ahead of time what's negotiable and what's not. And always clarify responsibilities, who's responsible for doing what. And as I mentioned, be sure to get it in writing. So the question of if to disclose a disability in the workplace, first and foremost, the choice is yours as a person with a vision impairment. There's no right answer to this. If you feel in your heart that you do not want to disclose or discuss your disability in the workplace, that is your choice. The information that I put here is just to sort of help you to make that decision, to know what the implications are of doing it and to do it at different times. So some of the benefits of disclosing your disability, your vision impairment in the workplace is that it begins the employer's obligation to consider accommodations. It helps you get what you need in order to do the job. It provides you with protection under the law once you have it out there. It can give you peace of mind or just that feeling of honesty. I don't know about the rest of you, but sometimes it just makes me feel better to just put it out there and to know that I don't have to worry about it. And sometimes that can just feel nice, give you a little bit of peace of mind. It also gives you opportunities to answer questions and to demonstrate your positive self-perception to an employer, to just have it all out there. Some of the disadvantages, as a lot of us know, is that you may fall victim to discrimination. Misconceptions and stereotypes and assumptions about blindness can be formed by an employer before you have a chance to prove yourself. Employers and coworkers might focus too much on your vision impairment or your disability. You might have to feel like you have to work harder to prove your worth. You might feel isolated on the job once you put it out there, and you might feel that there's a loss of privacy after you've shared this kind of personal information about yourself with your supervisor, with your colleagues. So if you choose to disclose is really, as I said, it's a decision that's up to you as a person on the job. There's also a question of when to disclose, and there are a lot of different steps in the process when this might come up. It may happen on a resume or on a cover letter. For example, if I do a lot of volunteer work with the National Federation of the Blind, I may put that on my resume because I want to show my accomplishments there, I want to show my experiences there. But also in doing so, when my resume gets onto an employer's desk or in their email inbox, they're going to see that, and they may make assumptions about me as a blind or visually impaired person before I actually have a chance to address them in person. The disclosure can happen before or during the interview, after the interview, or before or after an offer is made. You could do it on your first day on the job, which may not be recommendable in most situations. You could wait until after a problem arises and then bring it up, or you may choose to never bring it up. How to disclose, again, is something that I kind of touched on with a lot of the tips on self-advocacy, but always demonstrating positive nonverbal communication in terms of eye contact, handshake, posture. Getting some practice with those can sometimes help to get feedback from a friend or a family member. Focusing always on the job-related implications, objectively stating your accommodation needs and their benefits, and being prepared and offering solutions and outside resources whenever possible. And my last section here was to hopefully address some of the frequently asked questions from the employer perspective. And I apologize if I'm rushing through this again. I'll be happy to make all this information available to everybody afterwards. Some of the myths and misconceptions about blindness, I'm sure that a lot of us on the webinar today are no strangers to some of these, but people in the general public may have some misconceptions about blind people and their capabilities, including that someone who's blind is unsafe or accident prone, that they're unable to use technology, that we're slow or clumsy, and that we may not be competent at doing our jobs, which all of us know is couldn't be farther from the truth. So what do employers need to know about working with someone who's visually impaired? At the top of my list was adaptive technology. So often we encounter employers who just don't know about all the range of adaptive technology that's out there to enable someone who's visually impaired to use a computer, to access printed materials, etc. So first and foremost, I think that's a real eye-opening experience for employers, just to learn about the technology that's out there and what it's capable of doing. Oftentimes we work with employers who want to know how to assist somebody who's blind or visually impaired. They need to know about using descriptive language, saying to the right or to the left instead of over there. They need to know to respect a person's autonomy and to ask first before offering assistance. I think a lot of us can relate to that. And sometimes they also want some advice about how to give sighted guide or how to assist someone who's visually impaired or blind. What's the most effective way to do that? Communication can also be an issue. We have some information that we use here at the Chicago Lighthouse when we're working with employers that just gives them a few pointers about using person-first language whenever possible, and to know that they don't have to tiptoe around using words like see and look and blind, that communication like that doesn't really need to be a big deal. We also provide employers with information about tax incentives. Here in the U.S., there are a number of tax incentives that employers can take advantage of when they hire somebody with a disability. So even though we're not providing them with specific legal or tax advice, we do make that information available to them so that they know what's out there. A few tips for interacting with employers. One of the most important things is to think like an employer, and this was sort of a challenge for me when I first got into this field, is that employers are looking for something that makes good business sense, period. So you need to try to think from their perspective and to answer their questions before they ask them. You have to be like a salesman. Providing practical advice, resources, and support, again, focusing on the solution and not the problem. And I think this one is important, not to overwhelm or distract an employer with overly technical or medical terms about blindness or vision impairment. I think some of us in the field sort of take some of these things for granted, but from an employer who doesn't have a lot of experience working with somebody who's blind or visually impaired, things like that can be pretty overwhelming. So I included a few resources at the end here, which I would be happy to share with everybody. I listed some websites, including the AFB Career Connect website, the Job Accommodations Network website, which has some great resources for employers and professionals and job seekers with information about various accommodation strategies that can be used on the job. For more information about the Americans with Disabilities Act in particular, ADA.gov has some wonderful information. They have some frequently asked questions, some brochures, information for employers, et cetera. And there are also ADA technical assistance centers in various regions of the U.S. that are able to provide great information for employers, for job seekers, and professionals about the technical aspects of implementing reasonable accommodations on the job. So you can find more information about them at ADATA.org. And, of course, I would welcome anybody to contact me with questions or concerns. My email address is kelsey.thompson@chicagolighthouse.org. And my phone number is area code 312-666-1331. So I kind of rushed through all that as quickly as I could without missing any of the super important points. I guess I will leave our last 10 minutes or so open for questions or comments, Billy, if that's okay.
You got it. Thank you. Thank you very much, Kelsey. I loved your presentation. Okay, folks, we're open for questions. I'm going to free the mic, so if you want to ask something by microphone, by all means, go for it. If you'd like to ask something in the chat room, I'll be watching it.
If you're totally blind, which obviously is going to be something that you're not going to get around when you go to an interview, how do you try to put someone's mind at ease because of those stereotypes and what have you?
Good question, Christy. Kelsey, did you get that question?
I think I did, yeah. The first thing I would tell you is to remember that you, as a person who's blind, you are the expert, and I think that that other people will probably be looking to you to tell them how they can best assist you. So whenever possible, like I said, try to gather as much information as you can ahead of time about what the process is going to be like during the day of the interview, what you're going to be expected to do, who you're meeting with, where you're going. And if necessary, you might need to talk to someone ahead of time, to the interviewer, to let them know in a professional and an effective way about what your needs might be. If you're going to need a sighted guide or someone to assist you with getting from the reception area to the room where you're going, and things like that. But always remember that you're the expert, you're in control, and you really need to convey that in the way that you communicate with them. As it's, I'm sure, easier said than done. Because I know situations like that can be very nerve-wracking, but do your best to maintain control, to show confidence in what you're doing.
Thanks, Kelsey. Other questions?
Kelsey, I was wondering, I'm up in Canada, of course, so I know that it's we don't have the ADA down there, or up here we probably have something else. But anyway, I was wondering, I'm currently working with a job developer through an employment agency who, she's worked with legally blind, but not totally blind, and sometimes she's applied on my behalf for jobs and has said to me, you can do this, it's got customer service. I used to work in a call center and got laid off, not of my own doing, it was, we lost our contract, but she's like, oh, you can do this, it's customer service. And then you look further down the job posting and there's clearly some parts of the job and a lot of them that somebody who's totally blind such as myself wouldn't be able to do. And I'm just wondering how do I convey to her this, you know, certain things that I can do, and there's, unfortunately, of course, there's always limitations, and I'm just trying to describe to her, look, these are things that I can do, these are things that really no technology can allow me to do. And also the other question I have too is when it comes to disclosure, I am a guide dog user, and it's, you know, when do you disclose? Because my fear is I walk into an interview and I haven't disclosed on my resume that I'm blind, and I walk into the interview and I have my guide dog with me. well, that's a pretty, you know, you can't hide your disability when you have a guide dog with you. So I'm just wondering, you know, what to do here.
Both very good questions. Regarding your first question, that's kind of an interesting point that you brought up, where you feel like you have a pretty objective look at your skills and your limitations, but the job developer that you're working with is who's kind of overlooking some of those. So what I would suggest, and this is just sort of the first idea that came to mind here, would maybe be to sit down with your job developer and go through a personal skills assessment together, so that you can kind of take an in-depth look at your skill set and what you're able to do and what you're not able to do, what the limitations are, and if those limitations relate to like to technology, like you said, to just kind of go through that and maybe take a closer look at them, and that might help the both of you to get a better picture of where you're at, what you offer, and what some of your limitations are. What are some things that you feel like you just aren't going to be able to work around? So for your other question, that's a pretty huge question for someone who's a guide dog user, even a white cane user. You're right that makes your vision impairment, your disability, pretty obvious to anybody that meets you for the first time. So in instances like that, there isn't a simple answer to it, but when we're looking at like an interview scenario, if you were to get called in for an interview, then you really do need to start thinking about how you're going to disclose it, if you choose to do it ahead of time, rather, you know, to sort of minimize the shock value, I guess, when you walk in there with a guide dog or with your white cane out, so that the person isn't kind of caught off guard by that, even though it might not be, it's not a big deal to you, but to them it might be something that's a little unexpected. So you might think about how you want to bring it up beforehand. One thing to keep in mind is that if you're getting called for an interview, the person who is calling you may not actually be the person that you're meeting with. It might not be the hiring manager or the employer themselves. It might be an assistant that's calling you. So it may be a good idea to ask them if it's possible to speak to the interviewer or the hiring manager ahead of time, just so you can address some of those things up front so that they know. Even though I can understand your concern that maybe you don't want to bring it up too soon, because you want to be able to get a fair chance and to showcase your skills and your abilities rather than having them focus on just this one aspect of you. But I think that might be the best way to do it when you're a guide dog user, when your vision impairment is more obvious like that. But again, it's going to vary from one situation to another with what you're comfortable with the nature of the job and the hiring processes. So you kind of have to take it on a case-by-case basis.
Had a suggestion here in the chat room, Kelsey, to introduce them to the dog guide as you shake hands and address the issue immediately as if it's no big deal. Sounds like also a good idea. We've got a couple of questions coming into the chat room that I wanted to address next, Kelsey, if it's all right with you. The first one comes from Christina Nixon, and she says, can you please give some examples of how you would bring up your blindness during an interview?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that, because that's something I had to kind of skip over as I was going through it. But there are certain interview questions where I noticed that some of my clients and even myself feel sort of tempted to bring up the issue of your vision impairment or your blindness, and there are some that kind of work better than others. What I will say is the absolute worst time to do it during an interview is when you get that classic interview question about, tell me about some of what you think are your greatest weaknesses. Never, ever, ever associate your vision impairment as being a weakness, because that's what's going to stick with the employer. So you want to avoid doing that. Some other times where it might be okay would be when you get that sort of initial tell me about yourself question, if you feel like you want to bring it up then, it would be up to you. It could be something that you do at the end when you get to the point about, is there anything else about you that you think we should know? But there are other times where it might be appropriate to bring up as well. If you're a lot of times nowadays we see these sort of behavioral interview questions where you're asked, can you describe a time when you had to ... when you had to overcome a challenge on the job or deal with an ethical dilemma or something like that. So if you have a good example for one of those questions that also addresses your blindness or your vision impairment, by all means go for it, especially if you can present it in a way that shows your strengths, that shows how you've overcome problems or challenges, and that can show that you're resourceful and competent and things like that. So you kind of have to feel it out and see how the interview goes so that you do it at a time when you feel comfortable with it. But my one caution is to never, ever associate it as a negative or a weakness, because that's definitely what an employer is going to remember, regardless of how much other positive stuff you say.
Nicely put, Kelsey. Got another question in the chat room, and then I'll open the microphones back up, folks. This is from Jody Paxton. She said she had a phone interview with a company and chose to self-disclose. The interviewer told her not to disclose this point as it might influence my decision, and she asked how should that have been handled.
Wow, that's kind of interesting. I've never really encountered an employer that kind of took it like from that perspective, which is interesting. And I think that I kind of have a respect for the employer for doing that at that point, because they wanted, sounds like anyway, they wanted to focus more on, on your qualifications, your skills, your credentials, et cetera. And they didn't want your disability to potentially negatively influence their decision. So that's kind of interesting that you encountered that. And I guess how that should have been handled, after you were told, don't tell me about this right now, might influence my decision, let's move on, then I think that's probably exactly what's best to do, is to just move on and to, again, keep it focused on your positives, on why you're a qualified candidate for the position, and to respect the employer's wishes, to really focus on that instead of bringing up your blindness at that time. But that's kind of an interesting scenario. I haven't really encountered that.
I hadn't either, Kelsey. That's a new one on me, but I like your answer. We've got another question in the chat room that I'm probably going to get to, but folks, I realize that we've come to the end of our broadcasting day here, and because we started a little late, I'm going to extend a little bit, probably about 15 minutes, Kelsey, if that's okay with you. Are you okay to hang in for just a little while?
Sure, absolutely.
And we'll keep answering questions, folks, for another 15 minutes or so. And let's start with this chat room question, and then I'll open the mics. This one's from Hannah Tyler. She says, what if you were accepted for the job and then they denied after realizing the disability but were clever at covering themselves?
Oh, yeah, Hannah, that definitely happens more often than we'd like to think. And it's unfortunate that in this day and age, with a lot of the protections that are now in place under the laws like the ADA, that discrimination like that unfortunately still exists. It's just become a lot more subtle, and it's become a lot more difficult to prove. So that's one of the reasons why it's always important to have a paper trail and to get things in writing whenever possible, even though that's not a foolproof solution, but a lot of times that can help if you have something backed up, if you have it in writing. And also to know about resources that you can work with legal advocacy organizations or with the protection and advocacy organizations that are available here in the U.S. I'd be happy to provide anyone with information about how to locate your local protection and advocacy group, but they do provide legal assistance for people with disabilities, and they deal a lot with Americans with Disabilities Act cases, and especially with employment. So it's unfortunate when it has to come to that point, but the reality is that it does happen from time to time, and that's one of the reasons why a lot of job seekers who are visually impaired or blind are so hesitant and uncertain about this question of if and how to disclose a vision impairment, because we know that there's a potential for negative consequences if we do. So I think that making sure you have things in writing and doing whatever you can to cover your bases and to be an effective self-advocate before that happens is great. But if it does happen, then you need to seek out resources to get you the help that you need.
Pretty good information for anybody who's facing discrimination in it. Thanks, Kelsey. I'm going to open up the microphone, folks, now for anybody who might have a question via the mic.
My question is almost like the next. What happens after you have, been turned down? What is, the next step you take after that?
All right. Well, if you have been turned down for a position, it's kind of up to you to feel out, you know, if you want to pursue this or not. Some people might say, you know what, you don't want to work for this employer anyway, they're a jerk, forget about it, move on. But if you feel like you've really been wronged and that you want to, that you want to pursue it and kind of fight for what you think is right, then by all means, seek out an advocacy organization or do your best to pursue it. But it's going to depend on how you feel about it and how you feel about the job and the employer and if you would rather just move on or if you want to fight the fight. You know, it's definitely a personal decision.
Got another question in from the chat room. Kelsey, how do you tell the employer on the phone before the interview about your blindness?
If you do decide that you want to disclose before the interview on the phone, as I mentioned earlier, make sure that you're disclosing to the right person. If you're talking to an assistant or someone who's just scheduling the interview for you, that's probably not the person you want to disclose it to. So if at all possible, to see if you can speak to the hiring manager or the person you're going to be interviewing with, for one. All of those rules of self-advocacy that I talked about earlier would still apply. Make sure that you're not being overly apologetic or overly aggressive. Make sure that you're stating things objectively and that you're keeping it related to the job, related to the position that you're applying for. And because you did your homework and you've researched the company, if you've researched the job, you know what your needs are likely to be on the job. So keeping it relevant to that and being positive and conveying confidence in what you're saying without being too pushy or aggressive, I think is great. And, you know, making sure that you're talking to the right person, of course.
Thanks, Kelsey. Let's open the microphone up again for anybody who has questions via the microphone.
Hello. I've noticed so many times that in this job search economy that we're in now, companies are kind of doubling up on jobs. A lot of listings in the paper have multiple tasks that they're asking people to do. What do you do if you can do about 80 or 90% of those jobs, but there's one thing listed in there or something that just you're not going to be able to do as a blind or visually impaired person? Do you go ahead and apply for that job, or how do you handle that?
Kind of an interesting question, and I can definitely relate to what you're saying. We do see that a lot in the job leads that we're seeing these days. A lot of positions whose titles are now administrative assistant / trainer or something like that, where we're seeing job responsibilities being doubled up. So I think what it comes down to is looking at what's an essential function of this job and what's not essential. And sometimes you can gauge that just based on reading a job description or a help wanted ad, but sometimes you can't. So I think that you have to get out your crystal ball and try to predict as best you can. But if you're able to make a strong argument that you're able to do the major functions of this job, if you're able to succeed in landing an interview, fantastic. Then you can address some of these things on the spot and show them what you're capable of doing, and then maybe finding an accommodation to cover the things that you're not. But from the legal side of it, I think it comes down to just finding out what's essential for the job and what's not essential. And if you're able to do the essential functions of that job, then by all means, you need to go with it.
Nicely put. Betty Fatah, who asked the last question on the chat room, says thank you, Kelsey. And now I'm going to open the microphone up for more questions.
Because you are limited, and because you are visually impaired, are you limited to certain jobs?
Oh, definitely not. And I have to address that a lot with my clients that I'm working with because as I said, sometimes a person will come in and sit across me and say, well, what kind of job can a blind person do? And like I said, my response to that is what kind of job can you do? Because your vision is just a small piece of what makes you qualified to do a job. So, I mean, I've worked with individuals here in my position, people who are blind who are working as attorneys, as nurses, as actors, as psychologists, as teachers. It really runs the gamut. So the short answer to it is no, you're really not limited in the type of job you can do. With the right accommodations, it's really limitless. Now, based on what your skills and your abilities and your interests are, then, yeah, maybe there are certain jobs that you wouldn't be able to do. For example, I know myself, I could never work as a salesman. I just don't have the skills. I don't have those personal qualities that it takes to be a good salesperson. And that's got nothing to do with my vision. It just has to do with my personality. personality and my skill set. So the short answer is no, your vision shouldn't limit you from the job that you want to do, with a few exceptions, of course. I mean, being a fighter pilot or a NASCAR driver might not be a possibility, but for the most part, you shouldn't let your vision limit yourself in what kind of job you're looking for.
And we got a comment in the chat room here that's pretty interesting from Vicky Kelsey, saying maybe brain surgeon might not be such a good idea, but you guys need to know that there were a couple of surgeons who are totally blind who graduated. Gosh, Kelsey, I can't remember. You may know this better than I do. It was just in the last few years. Now, what kind of work they're doing, I'm not sure, but
I did meet a gentleman a few years ago who was totally blind, was a recent graduate from medical school and was working in, I believe he was working in a general practice, as a general practitioner in medicine. So it's certainly a possibility. As I said, with the right accommodations, the possibilities are practically limitless.
And technology is changing that world completely. I'm going to open up the microphone for questions again, folks. Here it comes.
It's Jade again up in Canada. Yeah, there is a doctor that's, I cannot remember his name. Freedom Scientific had him on their podcast series that they do, their FS cast, and he was on there. It was really interesting to hear from him. I just wanted to touch briefly on what I was saying earlier. Kelsey, now, have you heard of anybody with a visual impairment, total blindness, not visual impairment, total blindness, doing the position that my job developer had applied on my behalf or wanted me to as well? Was it was a bank teller, and she saw the customer service portion at the top of the job, and which was the main, it was the main part of it, but then the day-to-day responsibilities underneath, you know, were things such as filling out deposit slips, you know, foreign currency, checks, you name it, anything that to do with what a bank teller would do. And so one of my questions is, you know, how do I say to her, look, you can't just look for customer service. You have to look at the important responsibilities that you do in this job and kind of weigh the which ones are very essential and which ones aren't. Because in this job, it looked like everything was pretty essential, the day-to-day responsibilities. It wasn't just customer service. It was everything to do with money and everything else. So I'm just wondering how to go about this with her, because she's one of these real go-getters, which I like, but she just doesn't seem to know the difference between someone with a legal blindness and someone who's actually totally blind and, you know, relies on, say, a screen reader and stuff like that. She doesn't really have the resources, and I've been trying to tell her, you know, you need to research, like, what a screen reader is. You need to research, you know, stuff like that. So I'm just trying to figure this out before I set myself up for failure.
Could somebody who is visually impaired still work in the theater?
Okay, go for it.
Okay. So, again, another really good question, Jade. And aside from what I mentioned earlier about possibly sitting down with your job developer to do a personal skills assessment for you together, it's another good resource, as I think I mentioned earlier, was the American Foundation for the Blind's Career Connect website, which is just afb.org/careerconnect. One of the things that's nice about that site is you can connect with mentors or with other people with varying levels of vision loss who are doing a terrific diversity of jobs, and you can search by the type of job that they're doing. You can search by geography. So if I wanted to find somebody who was totally blind who was working as a bank teller in the Chicago area, I could kind of tailor my search that way and connect with somebody and kind of find out how they do their job. But one of the things that I was hearing in what you were describing is that it's something that you might not necessarily feel comfortable with, or that you just really don't feel like you're capable of doing. And I think that's what's most important. Even though it might be possible for somebody who's totally blind to succeed on this job and to use assistive technology, technology, to use a bill identifier, to do all of the things that are required on the job. If it's something that you don't feel comfortable with, if you feel like it's going to be too complicated to accommodate yourself in it, then I think that's what is most important, that you're not necessarily limiting yourself, but you're trying to be realistic. So, you know, always kind of keep that at the forefront. You know what your capabilities are. You know what you're comfortable with and what you're not comfortable with. So use these resources when you can to kind of get ideas or to maybe give you confidence. But if you feel like you're still just not feeling it, then you need to make it clear to the person that you're working with.
Thanks, Kelsey. Nicely put. And, folks, we've come to the end of a broadcasting day here. I see the questions are starting to pour in the chat room. And, Kelsey, would you mind if they wrote you directly related to some of these?
Of course not. I'd be happy to talk to anybody offline after our webinar ends today.
Okay, I appreciate it, Kelsey, because we need to call a close to this, folks. Kelsey, you've been just absolutely wonderful. This was a great presentation, and I loved the question-and-answer session especially. Folks, you asked lots of good questions, and Kelsey gave you a lot of useful information here, so thank everybody for this. I want to remind you folks that this webinar, like all of the seminars at Hadley, are all archived, and you can access them via our main webpage that's where it says access past seminars. It takes usually a couple of days, sometimes three, depending on how close to a weekend we are, before we can get stuff up on the web. But when it goes up with all the accoutrements. So the PowerPoint will be listed there, and you'll be able to watch a lot of the slides that we weren't able to get up for you today, so not to worry. Any handouts, Kelsey, if you got anything like that you want to put up, we can archive all that with the presentation. You might just want to listen to it again, folks, to listen to these questions again. They were just fabulous. So with that in mind, just mention a couple of related Hadley courses. One I'll mention because Kelsey mentioned her name in her presentation. Karen Wolf also has a webinar in our past seminars called Career Options, so you might want to check that one out. There's another on Focus on Employment and yet another on Art of Professionalism. All these are really good to check out. If you're looking for a course to take, I definitely recommend Business Communications course, which might help with some of these issues, the Business Fundamentals course also, the Finding Employment course if you're on the lookout, and check out the Foresight Center for Entrepreneurship. They're adding courses just almost daily, folks, so by all means, check that out. Again, thank you all for coming. Thanks for taking part in my polling questions. I appreciate that. Kelsey, thanks a million for doing this. It was just wonderful. Any final words you've got for the folks here today?
Oh, I just wanted to thank everybody for your insightful questions and for your patience with our technical difficulties. I really enjoyed talking with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelsey. And, folks, I just put Kelsey's address back up on the screen. It's Kelsey, K-E-L-S-E-Y, Thompson, T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N, at Chicago Lighthouse, all one word, chicagolighthouse.org, and you can check in with Kelsey. Absolutely wonderful, folks. Hope you all have a great weekend and enjoy the rest of this day. Take care of yourselves.